Well, 1 year ago today, we checked in with BBC reporter John Line about a little demonstration scheduled to take place in Cairo in a place called Tahrir Square.
Not huge numbers, maybe a few hundred, but very much a different spirit than we're used to here in Egypt, where demonstrations can be very small and quickly packed away by the police.
Well, that spirit changed over the course of our show that day and turned into an uprising, and the government fought back.
There were very violent confrontations here. The police had managed to move on the demonstrators and broken up the crowd that had gathered outside the parliament building. I couldn't tell you exactly how many, but I think it had got up to several thousand.
Still, at the end of the day, Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton had this to say.
Our assessment is that the Egyptian government is stable. And is looking for ways to respond to the legitimate needs and interests of the Egyptian people.
Well, that stability, as we all know, quickly changed. In the past year, the country has taken big steps to transition to a more democratic government. President Hosni Mubarak was ousted from power. Egypt rewrote its constitution. And the first freely elected parliament in more than 60 years held their first session this week. Thousands have packed Tahrir Square this morning to commemorate the revolution. Joining us now is Robin Wright, journalist who has reported on the Middle East for major newspapers since 1973. Her book, Rock the Kasbah, Rage and Rebellion Across the Islamic World, examines youth and revolt in the Muslim world. She joins us via Skype from her home in Washington. Robin, good morning.
Good morning.
We recounted the advances and the successes of the Egyptian revolution, parliamentary elections, Hosni Mubarak out. But it has not been smooth. The last month has seen fits and starts in Egypt. Where does Egypt stand right now in this road to democracy? How far along, really?
Well, this is a really tough time for Egypt on many fronts. First of all, they've had renewed clashes in October, November, and December, which many now refer to as the second phase of the rebellion. And many Egyptians now look at what's beginning today as the third phase. The next 6 months, we'll see the transition, including writing a new constitution, electing a new president, but also, most importantly, trying to dislodge the military, which has been effectively in control, not just for the past year, but really since 1952, when the Free Officers Movement ousted the monarchy and increasingly played a role in assuming power, not just in security issues, but also in gaining veto over legislation and foreign policy, accruing enormous assets. Some say up to one-third of economic life is controlled directly or indirectly by the military, including vast tracts of land. So this is going to be tougher in many ways than ousting a single dictator, and because the stakes are so huge for the military in general, and because this is a brand-new, inexperienced parliament. It's led by Islamists who won 70% of the vote and who have not had a long history of cooperation or collaboration with the military. So we're entering a whole new era in Egypt today.
And you mentioned Islamists who control 70% of the parliament. What are we to make of those Islamists? Islamist is one word. There's a lot of concern in this country about Islamic extremists or Muslim fundamentalism taking over in Egypt. Any sign of that? What does Islamist mean in Egyptian politics?
It's a very important question, and this is one that applies to the entire Middle East because this is one of the common trends we're seeing in response to the uprisings. In Morocco, Tunisia, Egypt, Libya, you're seeing the rise of various types of Islamist parties. All of them have renounced violence. They are very different from Al-Qaeda and some of the other movements that have engaged or have long histories of extremist attacks. The two prominent Islamist groups in Egypt include the Muslim Brotherhood, which has been around since 1928. It renounced violence formally in the 1970s. It's been trying to work inside the political system to run for office, even though it was formally banned by the government since the 1980s. It had 88 members of parliament in the previous parliament during Hosni Mubarak's era. It will be the most important player. It won about 47% of the vote, not enough to make a majority. The second party to win the largest votes is the Salafi Nur Party. And the Salafis are ultra-conservative who follow the kinds of strict practices in Saudi Arabia. And the interesting thing, I've just come back from Egypt and interviewed many of the members of both parties, and it's interesting to the degree to which they don't like each other, don't trust each other, and don't always have a common agenda. Muslim Brotherhood looks on the Noor Party, which just was formed last summer, as inexperienced, inflexible, and kind of dogmatic, whereas the Noor Party looks on the Muslim Brotherhood as having compromised and being too flexible with non-religious parties. And so they are not forming a coalition so far.
So that's the... That's part of the Islamic identity in Egypt. Robin Wright, in just the minute we have left, President Obama kind of referred to to American soft power in the Arab Spring last night, saying we'll defend the values of the Arab Spring. Is in the new Middle East, the new Egypt, America weakened there, in your estimation?
America's place in the Middle East is changing dramatically. And in many cases, we can provide economic aid. We need to probably try to reaffirm security and international treaties like Camp David. But by and large, I think this is a moment the Egyptians want to feel that they're determining their future and not being dictated to by the outside world. We will have far less influence in Egypt in the next few years than we did in the past.
Journalist and author Robin Wright, author of Rock the Casbah, Rage and Rebellion Across the Islamic World, joining us from Washington, D.C. Robin, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.